In the name of God, in the Arabic language we call him Allah, the beneficent, the merciful, the one God to whom all praise is forever due, the Lord of all the worlds. I bear witness that there is but one God, and I bear witness that Moses, I bear witness that Abraham, I bear witness that Jesus, and I bear witness that Muhammad are his messengers. I am thankful that I have the great blessing to be able to stand before you and give you the prayerful words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, As-salamu alaykum. For those unfamiliar with these words, again, they only mean in English, peace be unto you. We stand before you and we stand together on this afternoon because, as the Bible says, justice stands afar off and equity cannot enter because truth has fallen to the street. This week has marked a historic series of events that we should all be as well informed of as possible. Of course, we were able to watch the trial begin for the murder of Oscar Grant, the preliminary hearing against Johannes Mezeli, the people versus Johannes Mezeli. One thing that we are clear about is that we all qualify as people. So when we hear the expression people versus Johannes Mezeli, we're not talking about some other folk out there who are angry about the murder of our brother and the murderer of our brother. When the state says the people versus Johannes Mezeli, what makes this case a little different from many is the people are willing and ready to stand in the courtroom, outside the courtroom, wherever it is you must stand in order to secure justice. And so we have here with us family members and other witnesses that were in the courtroom, that were able to experience some, in my case, or all in the cases of others, of the proceedings that we have experienced over the past few days. One of the things that I want to make crystal clear with you about is when I arrived for the first day of the hearing and it was announced that a new video had emerged that was captured by a young brother, highly intelligent young man, student at San Francisco State University, his name, Mr. Cross. What is his first name?
Tommy.
Brother Thomas, or Tommy Cross, who was on the BART train the night of the murder, who captured what they said was some of the sharpest footage, because what he captured, he did not capture on a cell phone, he captured on an actual video or video digital camera. And the interesting thing to me was this. We watched Chief G and other members of BART declare, at least to an angry public, that they had not confiscated any cell phone cameras. Well, now listen to the slick language used here. They didn't get a cell phone camera. They got the digital chip out of the camera. So when we were told to appease us, we didn't take any cameras. And we challenged them, are you going to leave it to the town hall meeting to do the investigation and go find cameras ourselves, because it looks like BART police is not going to find any of the various cell phone cameras that were known to be on the platform on that night? But when I read about Brother Tommy, he said to the press that he wished that he had been able not to give that chip to BART police, but to give it directly to the family of Oscar Grant. But the question becomes, of course, why? Why wouldn't he want to put evidence in the hand of a lawful investigative body in this instance, Bart? Well, it is because there's history here that leads us to wonder, what would Bart actually do? What would his officers actually do if they were to receive clear evidence of wrongdoing on behalf of their officers? So Mr. Cross found himself in a cross. And of course, the scripture, or there's a song that says, "Shall Jesus bear the cross alone, while all the world go free?" Because most people don't want to be in the cross. Mm-hmm. While we are in church, in the imagery of churches is cross. That cross represented in those days trouble. Well. So that meant that you would be persecuted.
Yes.
That meant that you were to be prosecuted. In fact, it was the Roman authority that designed that cross, and at that time it was known as a death cross. It was used to kill people. So when our brother, who happens to be named Cross, found himself in the Bayfair BART station after the horrific and assassination of our brother Oscar, as he attempted to look at what his camera captured, somehow with this jam-packed to the rafter train, BART officers were evidently looking for people that had captured this murder on camera. Because what's the likelihood that you're in a crowded BART station on New Year's? It has been testified that these trains were standing room only. What is the likelihood that law enforcement would be at another station looking over people's shoulders to see if they in fact were looking at video footage? I don't know that there's any kind of criminal act. I have my phone with me. On it is a video, I think there's a video camera on here. I need to get with my young brother. Is it Jamal or Jamil? Jamal. I have to have brother Jamal give me some.
Jamil,
I'm sorry. I got to have brother Jamil show me how to make the distinction between video and snapshot. However, when they were in the station, I'm at this phone too many hours in a day, and I'm twiddling my thumbs too many hours in the day. However, I wouldn't expect that my looking down at this screen would attract police attention. But when young brother Tommy got off the train, not with a phone, but with a camera in his hand, with one of his or two of his friends looking down at the camera, all of a sudden, that glance, that attention given to a camera became interesting to BART police. So evidently, a call must have already been given that there's cameras on this. Look for, they haven't said it in court yet, maybe we can suggest that the DA would ask, were law enforcement officers instructed to look for videotape footage or audio tape footage at the next stations? Otherwise, there's nothing that should have gathered the attention of police on a young man who had broken no law, was not accused of breaking of any law, that he should be now brought to a BART police station at Bayfair because his camera captured footage, and they asked him, would he allow them to take the chip? But that brother testified that he feared that if he did not release this footage, that his health, or at least his well-being, was in jeopardy. Why would he testify to that? Because he just saw the murder of Oscar Grant a few minutes before. Under the color of law. He witnessed this. So does he know the difference between Johannes Medley and officer whoever it was at Bayfair BART? No, he doesn't know the difference. He sees the uniform, he sees the gun, he sees the taser, and he hears the demand being made for his video footage. They asked him, could we make a copy, took him to the office, and didn't have a computer capable. They claim of copying the footage. And so he gave up the original footage and never saw it again. The nerve of the defense attorney to attempt to challenge him on the elements of footage that he had not seen since the night of the killing. He couldn't testify as an expert viewer of the footage because he hadn't seen the footage because Bart took the footage from him. Well, as the case continued to unfold, we want to thank, and I don't want to call their names, but all of those that testified to the murder of Oscar Grant. I was a witness as a young man that the defense of Meserly alleged had been in a fight with Brother Oscar. Now, something happened on the train, but nothing like what Bart is expressing, or Meserly is expressing, or his defense is expressing. I think the defense attorney, in describing the events of that night, and he threw it out in funny questions at people. Did you see 20 people in a brawl? Then on another instance, I think he even mentioned a 20-minute brawl on board a BART train, a brawl for 20 minutes. And the reality was that the persons that were alleged to be in this brawl on the train, that this was supposed to have happened between Lake Merritt BART and Fruitvale BART. 5-minute ride. We could push BART. If it ran out of gas, we could push BART from Lake Merritt to Fruitvale in 20 minutes. You all understand my point, right? But they brought in the man that they said was in this gang fight. The first day they brought him, they had to force him in the room. And before they could ask him anything, he said, "Your Honor, I don't know why I'm here. I didn't see nothing."
Yeah.
And the defense attorney went on to convince the judge that they needed his testimony. They probably wish they didn't get it now. Because when they brought him in the next day to testify, he came in and said, "I wasn't in a fight. In fact, the defense brought their first witness to testify that he saw this fight. And as God is my witness, when they brought their first witness in, I thought that that man was Tony Perrone. In fact, I turned around and asked somebody, 'Is that Tony Perrone?' You know why? Because every morning he waited to get in. It's been standing room only to get into the courtroom, and there may be anywhere from 25 to 50 or more people waiting in the lobby to get first come, first serve, about 20 seats. So while we were waiting, the sheriffs who secure the court, there's generally been a brother at the door who smiles, is kind, and is polite. And then there's another officer, Caucasian man. He's been kind and polite. In fact, he's been pretty comedic. He comes in and says, because there's a mob at the door waiting, and he's kind of fat, and he comes, "Okay, clear the way. I need space. You see, I didn't miss any meals." And he makes a joke about himself because he does need room. He's a little fat. You all with me now? And he comes in jovially. Every time, but on this one occasion he went to get a witness, he didn't tell any jokes. He came with two or three other officers with him. Clear path. "Whoa, wait a minute. You were fat last time you came here. You had self-imposed jokes about your body weight the last time you came through. What happened?" So they went and picked up this witness. We hadn't gotten in yet. I think maybe the Grant and Meserly families were in, some of the press were in, but they came out with four officers. That's different.
Then they walked the man in. They backed us up and walked him in. And I turned around, is that Tony Peroni? Why does this man get so much security? And when he got in to testify, I thought he was a police when he walked past me. And there's something about being raised in the black community.
Come on.
I don't mean any offense to anybody else, but you kind of have a good nose for police. You all understand. Those that understand, you have a nose for it, because this can be a problem in any given moment. I drove past CHP today. Holiday, they got radar guns. And of course, I don't know how fast I was driving, but trust me, it got my attention 2-3 times. When I went past without breaking any law, I'm in the rear view mirror. Because I'm a black man raised in America that knows that any law enforcement stop is never routine. I never know when contact with law enforcement can be escalated, not because of what I'm doing, but because of what those officers just might decide to do. Last ticket I got, I was minding my business in Dublin. And when I crossed the police car's path, this man pulled me over and told me that my brake light was out. Well, he was there and I was here. How in the world did he see my brake light? Then when he got to my vehicle, he went out of his way to find something that he thought was out of the ordinary. Now, brake light is a fix-it ticket. They held me for 30 minutes. He called backup to deal with a brake light and the fact that two of my sons were sharing a seatbelt. It was racial profiling. When I went to court in Pleasanton, I have never seen that many black and brown people in Pleasanton in my life until I went to court. And when I got to court in the morning trying to get in early, there were a couple of hundred people lined up. I think it was on Stone Ridge Boulevard. There was a couple of hundred folks lined up. They were only going to let in the first 100. I was blessed to make it in that number, but if you had seen, oh, I wish I had my flyers with me for Caravan for Justice. I wish I had had my final calls with me. I was expecting this courtroom not to look like downtown Oakland or downtown Haiti. I was expecting in Pleasanton that this would be a white line, because that's who lives in the area. But when I arrived there and found that 80% of those standing in line looked like me, that was a shock. I shouldn't have been shocked. I should have known better. But as I went before the judge, the judge said, well, what was your ticket for? Brake light. Did you fix it? Yes, judge, I fixed it. Did you have a police officer check it off? No, judge, I didn't. I went to Kroger, bought a $1 light bulb and fixed it. I said, okay, we'll throw that one out. I said, what about this other thing? Were your children in a seatbelt? Yes, judge, they were. Well, why did they say they weren't? Well, judge, I have 4 boys, 2 little, and they were sharing a seatbelt. I would need a van to do it any other way. Judge took this $500 ticket. Now, he was looking, by the way, at 80% dark-skinned people, most of whom had tickets for things like cell phone. Y'all know how we do. Cell phone, brake lights, fix-it tickets. And I was so pleased to see that this judge knew what he was looking at. He was looking at the consequence of racial profiling by law enforcement in the area of Dublin and Pleasanton. So he took my $500 ticket and dropped it down to $50. I had to pay something. But I'm thankful, knowing that every engagement with law enforcement can go places that you could never imagine. So when Oscar and his friends engaged law enforcement that night, they didn't know, perhaps, where this would go. The witnesses didn't know where this would go. The witnesses with cameras knew that this is not going in the right direction. So Tommy Cross pulled out his camera. There were others on board that train. This brother is a hero.
Yes, sir.
There were others on board that train who were saying, shut the doors, there's trouble out there. Shut the doors before something happens. And Tommy is holding the doors and, no, I got to see what happens. Those are innocent people there on the platform. In fact, in his words, he could obviously see that this was excessive force. But the defense witness, he couldn't see nothing. He saw a fight, he said. And he said, in this fight was a Caucasian man with tattoos who didn't want to come and testify. They dragged him in. And he said that he feared for his wife and children's safety. So he got out of the BART train and went through the sliding doors into the next train. He said the man that was in the fight came to the door and wanted to get out of the train. Now, if there was a brawl involving 20 people, I would imagine that either everybody on the train was in the brawl. How do you walk away from that? If I'm in the midst of a 20-person brawl, and I'm the key character in it. Y'all with me now? See, if I'm the key character in it, I'm in the midst of this thing. This man described Oscar and his friends as throwing punches from everywhere. He was in court testifying. This is where it was coming. How did this man walk out to the door, and when he got to the door, witness number one told him, stop right there. I'm telling you, witness number one is either retired police, fired police, wannabe police, but police nonetheless. Because you don't go to a 20-person man, a 20-person brawl, find your way out of it and police the door. And when the man who is alleged to have been in the fight when Oscar comes to the door have the authority to say to a man who is allegedly fleeing for his safety, stop. And he stops. Y'all with me now?
Yes.
Now, our brothers have a little training in certain skills. And we know that there can come a time we've got to handle the situation in a physical way.
Right.
However, if there's a brawl going on, those that have ever been to a house party in the hood, I haven't always had a bow tie on.
Come on.
I mean, the Gap band was pumping. We was getting our thing on, you know. But if a gun broke out at that party, that party was over, wasn't it? And who had the power at the door to stop folks who feared for their lives from getting out that door? Now this man stops the man is alleged to be in the fight. Stop! You can't come through here if you're going to bring that trouble with you. Wasn't that his testimony? And he must not have feared for his life much. Then they had a conversation. Oh, I don't need any trouble. I've got my son here. We just want to get away from, you know, what happened.
Well, come on in and don't bring that trouble.
Then he gets on the phone. Train operator. There's a fight in the train in front. Operator says, are there any weapons? He said, no. Stop right there. Meserly's partner said he was called the Fruitvale Bar, and he was so frightened that he had to call his wife. He was thinking about his babies. Said, I'd give my last I love you before I went on to Fruitvale Bar. This is before the conflict happened.
Wow.
Was that a testimony? Something like that? I had to kiss the baby. I'm going to work. Well, maybe you should have stayed home on New Year's Eve. This man testified that he was scared. Now, the bar operator asked the undercover police, whoever this man is, are there any weapons? He says, no. Well, if there's no weapons, why would a law enforcement officer approach a scene with a weapon afraid? See, it doesn't add up, does it?
No, it does not.
This is part of the setup. This is part of the cover-up for Mr. Meserly to give the appearance that there was such a frightening scene. In fact, he said he was frightened. Well, then you need to psychologically test these if you want to be police officers, because you scared? You don't need to be in the police. If it has nerves, you don't need a gun on your hip. It's not good to have a scared man with a gun on his hip. That can't be good. So now, in that testimony, this undercover, wannabe retired, almost didn't make the force type police officer, says there's no weapons. Then they call him back over the intercom system and ask, well, what do they look like? His answer, black males. Then he just let through a man he said was in the middle of the fight, who's a Caucasian male with tattoos. He let him through the door. He didn't ask any of ours if they wanted to get through the door. He let the white man who was allegedly in the scuffle through the door and then told the bar operator that black males were in the scuffle. So now why is it that Mr. Peroni comes to the BART train looking for black males? By the way, came with a weapon in his hand. This is my weapon. This is our weapon. Recording devices. But he came with a weapon, I think a taser, in his hand. Was that the testimony? Pointed at windows. He's looking for black males. Then he gets on board the BART train. Get the F off the train. You know, I don't know our young brothers very well, but they probably think like I do. If I'm on a crowded train and some man says, get the F off the train, the first thing is you're not talking to me.
Right.
You can't be talking to me. I don't care who you are. The language you just passed into this train does not deserve a response. It's disrespect. Now, if you've got to do your job, then fine, do your job, but that language. He may as well say it, all the N-words, get off the train. Now, if you get off on that kind of command, well, we're not in the kind of time that our young people are so frightened of the Ku Klux Klan. So now that kind of language just might not get them what they're looking for. Well, it might get them the fight. So when he gets on the train and says, get the F off the train, if he said it to me, I'd have to hold myself. Y'all with me now? Bible speaks of God, says he held his peace. I have to hold my peace. But if he pushes it too far, Bible says he responds like a woman in travail. He destroys and he devours at once. So you don't want to push somebody that's trying to hold their peace with your mouth. And if you're a law enforcement practitioner, you should know that your mouth can drive people to the point of war. Now if you don't know that, you shouldn't be a law enforcement. So now as this case is unfolding, we're discovering things that you all should know. We're discovering how disingenuous Bart has been. how deep the cover-up is. None of those officers that testified honestly. One man said, Middle East Party is a big guy. Now, some of the young men that were there saw him. I saw him on video. He's a big guy. 6'5". Here's a man, 6'5". And from the look of his build, they got this thing where they want to try to show you their guns. Not this gun. These. Y'all with me now? So when you see a big man that didn't want to go to the big guy's store and get a shirt that fits him properly, he wants you to see his biceps. A few weeks ago, we went to Oakland City Council, and celebrating there that night was the football team, I think from Castlemont. They won the championship. And they came with their jerseys on. And they got a thing with the linemen to try to make them look a little bigger and to give you less jersey to grab. They put a tight grip on their bicep. Well, I'm looking at an officer with a club in his hand. His arms folded. He's pushing up the side of his bicep. Now I'm a lightweight. You all see that, right? But that's okay. I like playing with heavyweight. All right. And I'm looking at the man. That man wasn't afraid of nothing. He had the club in his hand. He had the taser on his hip. He had the gun on his hip. If he dropped that gun, he got another gun somewhere else. He's not afraid of anybody. Not to mention most of those that they claim to be afraid of are pointing phones at. Is that true? That one of them testified, I was frightened somebody threw a cell phone. If I didn't just buy this phone, I would throw it and show you how unfrightening it is. Especially if you've got a gun on your head. One of them testified. He was frightened. Can you catch this phone?
Yes, yes.
Don't drop my phone. Black guy. Thank you. He was frightened. That didn't frighten Brother Tony. He caught the phone. Thank God. I haven't got my rebate yet.
Can't be dropping my phone.
He testified that they were frightened. So it's astounding that a man has been killed and law enforcement testifies fear because they claim somebody threw a cell phone at him. So as this case unfolds, we're finding with each statement that Barnes has participated in cover-up, that every officer that have testified has not been real. All of them have been unreal. There's no way that they could claim that they were so frightened. I know young black men are strong and bold and don't mind talking. It's all right. That's why God gave you lips to speak with. But what they were not equipped with dealing with is young people who weren't acting like slaves. Period. Now, one young man watching and taping on his cell phone camera. An officer not letting him near the scene. And he tells the officer, I appreciate the spirit. It put me in tears. Because our young people have such great courage. He didn't bow down. He didn't tap dance. He wanted to record the abuse of his friends. And he told the officer, get out of the way. Now the officer don't have to move. They don't take orders from the civilians, but I understand the spirit. Said it more than once. Get out the way. Now, you know, we get a little older. You get a little more frightened, you know, fearful. You don't talk to the police like that. I appreciate that kind of talk. So So when he said, get out of the way, he moved and got better footage. And you know, for them to argue that this put fear in them, law enforcement. And when they began to brutalize the young men before killing Brother Oscar, I think our young brother said, pardon my language, but them niggas are beating on my cousin. Something to that effect. Well, you know, the defense attorney, when he heard the N-word, they're trying to frame an argument that young black males are frighteningly hateful and have a natural propensity to fight with the police. Well, if that were the case, how is it that we have filled up the prisons and they have not filled up the graves? That's not the case. It's just that we're in a time in which our young people will tell you what they think. The problem is they have not desired that young people think. They want us dumbed down. Oh, it was beautiful. When the defense attorney asked our brother, he said, did any police call you by a racial epithet? No, sir. Then they played the tape. Young brother said, them N-words shot my cousin and got away from that policeman and walked toward the scene. Now, all of the police, to my knowledge, are Caucasian, maybe one Latino. However, this exchange was the defense trying to shape an argument that the young men were racist against the police. Let me just, can we craft and frame something a little bit? What is racism? What is it really? Race is a socio-biological category used to determine human worth and social status that uses white as the paradigm. And in that construct is a new term, by the way. It only goes back a few hundred years. And even what you call white and others would then start using terms like negroid and mongoloid. These terms are very much new terms. Long before these terms were entered into daily conversation, you were just yourself. And you didn't have to waste your time trying to calculate what you call race. So they look at Brother Tony, huh? In the modern language. Or they look at Jack. Where is he? What is he? Where is he? I can't figure it. Maybe if he dances, we can figure it out by the rhythm. Because race is a new term. In fact, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that race has a beginning and an end. He said, we are not a race. He said, we're the original people of the planet, and you find us everywhere on the planet. And he said that and taught us that when Columbus set sail and found out everywhere he went, he found dark-skinned people. So these that are dark-skinned people are not minorities. He found that we've been found in the Isles of the Pacific. We are found in Australia. We are found in China. In fact, a scholar by the name of J.A. Rogers declared that you can find ancient black civilizations in Europe called the Grimaldi people. Minister Farrakhan went to Russia on a world tour, and when he got off the plane there, there were a group of people who called themselves the Nation of Islam. Y'all with me now? So this thing called race is not what they're trying to make it out to be. But when they asked our young brother, didn't you use a racial epithet? He said no.
The DA, or the defense attorney, was perplexed at that point. I'm sure the DA was a little confused too. He didn't know where this was going. He said, well, the video said you used the N-word. And the young brother said, no. I said N-I-G-G-A. He said a racial epithet would have been N-I-G-G-E-R. Now, if you're not hip-hop, you don't know what it is. You gotta get close enough to the hip-hop generation to get where it came from. In other words, he used a term that it does have both positive and negatives to it. And it wouldn't be my language of choice. I would try to share a little history behind the term that maybe we find a better term. You know, some years ago we were calling people we like our dogs. And men were calling women who were their girlfriends and wife by the B word. Well, that's not good language to use. It expresses what's in our mind and some of what is in our heart. We are not dogs. In fact, the Bible says that ye are all God's children of the Most High God, but because we've been turned inside out and upside down and round about, we flip the language. But we now, in the throes of a trial, we don't know where this trial will lead. In truth, to many of us, it's criminal that they even need a preliminary trial to figure out the level of charge. In my mind, that's criminal. I don't see the need for it. Go to trial. You got a videotape, shoot him. Now, I've never been through that kind of trial, and I don't know if everyone gets a preliminary hearing of that nature, but this is a case that absolutely, positively must be before a jury of our peers. Of our peers. So we say to the community, keep the pressure on. Do nothing that would enhance the plan of the defense to move this trial out of the county. We don't want to see another Rodney King moment here, where they take a trial that if it were in front of a jury of the county where the crime took place. I don't know the percentage of black and Latino in Alameda County. It must be somewhere near 50%. They don't want a jury that's half black and Latino. They want a jury like with Rodney King that's 100% white. You know, I have never accepted a jury invitation. I hope they invite me now. I don't think they let me on that jury. But invite me now, because I surely can see the relevance in this kind of climate of accepting a jury invitation. They want to find reason to get this trial out of Alameda County. So while we've gathered, and there's not been thousands in the most recent gatherings, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. We may do better to have a focused, concerted effort than to have 1,000 people and in the midst of that 1,000 undercover agents, provocateurs, who come for the sole purpose of producing a problem in a crowd. Come on. When we left the first day, I won't say what our brother's intentions were, I don't know. However, I can tell you this, when we addressed the crowd the morning before the first trial, there were 30 squad cars of OPD, at least 30, parked across the street at 9 in the morning. And when we addressed a small gathering, before we could get into the courtroom, they marched across the street in a riot line. Who was out there that morning? There was nothing riotous about us. I'm still trying to figure out why they called 30 squad cars. And by the way, you saw 30 squad cars. There were officers lined up in a room somewhere.
waiting for something to happen. Well, nothing happened except they did not know how to be kind and polite with people. They felt that they had to put their hands on people. And when folks were crossing the street trying to march after that day's court hearing was over, they were so aggressive, they almost ran us over, Brother Salim. Now, had I not been aware, I might have physically elbowed the officer running by, because you know when you're from the hood, you don't let people just run past you. And you got your wallet in your pocket and your phone on your hip. You almost caught a boat. Wait a minute. I had to put my elbow down. They went flying past us.
They had on pads.
One brother, I don't know why, what that brother was thinking.
Lineman's gloves.
He has grip pads on. That's linebacker pads. That's used for delivering a forearm shipment. He padded it up, had Nike swooshes on his forearms. Now, I didn't have time to talk to the brother. Come on, brother, before you are in the police, maybe you played some football and you need to quit. This crowd does not present any danger to you or to anybody else. Take them rip pads off. Who are you intending to rip?
I told you.
Coliseum is up the street.
I mean,
well, obvious. See, when you've got the mindset that you're looking for a problem, then you make a problem. So they came across the street, and when the young people and others crossed the street after the afternoon rally, I'm told they rolled up on the motorcycle, threatened to run people over. And when a young man maybe overreacted, maybe didn't, it produced an arrest scene, which was unwarranted. And so as we're planning our rallies, we want to say, stay disciplined. Be vigilant. Be watchful. Have your cameras with you. Record what is going on, because they will use every excuse to try to remove this trial from the county. Now, we want to do our best to ensure that this not become another Rodney King moment. Now, in our efforts, you should know, and I have a letter with me. Mr. Orloff, who refused to respond to community demand to bring swift charges against Johannes Mezele, and Mr. Orloff, who refused to even give a press conference to protect the public safety because the public felt that his silence was in fact consent in the murder of Oscar Grant. When young people went out, and others, they weren't just all that young, but were angry because the system hadn't spoken a word about justice for Oscar Grant, 7 days later in Oakland went into some rebellion mode. That rebellion was produced by the inaction of the district attorney, Tom Waller. Well, we've been talking to you for some time about a recall against him. And every time we filed, they found some I not dotted, some T not crossed. So we did it repeatedly. In fact, on one occasion, they told us we needed 10 signatures. We brought them 10, they canceled 2. Then we brought them 20 signatures. They canceled 5 and said we needed 20. Then we were prepared to bring them 50 signatures, and they said, you can't bring us more than 20. It's all game, right? I said, well, fine. We'll provide multiple forms of 20 signatures. And I took it in myself, since I couldn't get into the courtroom on Monday morning. I went into the basement. And when we went into the basement, we had with us what is now the signed, sealed, and delivered recall for Attorney Tom Orloff. So I want to thank all of those who came here and signed. Let me read what they sent me from the Registrar of Voters. I am writing, this is a copy of what they sent to Mr. Orloff. Dear Mr. Orloff, I am writing to notify you that a notice of intention to recall you from the office of district attorney was filed in our office on May the 18th, 2009. In parentheses, I'll add the first date of the murder trial for Your Honor's Message. Enclosed is a copy of the notice and statement filed with our office. You may file an answer of no more than 200 words, and I want to see what he files. If it's 202, he's out of here. You may, that's what they did with us. You may file an answer of no more than 200 words within 7 days in our office at 1225 Fallon Street, room G1, open, and also serve a copy of it with any one of the proponents listed on the notice of intention. If you file an answer, we must receive it by 5 o'clock p.m. Monday, May the 25th. Oh, yes, that's done it by now.
Yes.
Ah, if he gets caught up in the holiday, he's out of here. Let's see how he plays this. And so, sisters and brothers, the recall effort is underway. You don't want any other district attorney to allow the brutalization of our people and he perform his role in the cover-up of murder. Because this is not just happening here, as I prepare to wind this down. In Alabama, in the news right now, a young man, Anthony Warner, was involved in a police high-speed chase. They say that he was chased for 22 minutes in Birmingham, Alabama. The chase ended when he had an accident. He crashed his vehicle, and on the video, we see his vehicle flip over a couple of times and throws him out of the vehicle. The law enforcement cameras, which recorded it, the officers get out of their cars, and as this young man lay injured, wounded, unconscious, they took that time to issue him a Rodney King beatdown on a knocked out man. 1 year later, when Mr. Warren goes to trial for what they're charging him with, this video emerges. They're charging him with the fleeing of the scene and whatever damage may have been done by his vehicle. But in the process of his defense, this tape emerges 1 year later. What happened to civilian or citizen police review? Did they have an auditor, an ombudsman, or a citizen review? I don't know what, if anything, they have, Pastor. But I can tell you this, it had to come out in a court record. Like it's coming out now, how BART police are lying in the murder of Oscar Grant. It had to come out in a court record. There was no demand made until it came out in a court record. And after it comes out in a court record, the mayor of the city and the chief of the police have a press conference and fire 5 officers for the beatdown they put on a young man who didn't deserve anything but medical attention. And so, these incidents are happening everywhere. In Inglewood, California, just a few days ago, Kevin Eugene Wicks, at a family celebration and party, he was murdered by Inglewood police. He was shot over 20 times, unarmed, leaving a party not even knowing that there was any kind of law enforcement problem. They reacted to his movement as though he had a weapon and killed him. Congressperson Maxine Waters is now asking that the federal government intervened, because this is not the first time Inglewood PD has shot somebody in a similar fashion. Now, in the Alabama case, five officers were fired for take B. With Bart, no officer has been fired. That's Alabama, one of the lynch capitals of U.S. history. That's Alabama. Segregated South, that's Alabama. I heard Bo, you all remember Bo Jackson? He played ball in Alabama, Auburn. And when he joined the team, the coach slapped him in the helmet and grabbed him by the face mask. Bo Jackson, one of the greatest of all time, could not even be a full-time starter in Alabama. He had to split time with a man who should have been on the bench and played half the game. He didn't play full games until he got to the NFL, because they couldn't stomach in Alabama. The great Bo Jackson played full-time as a running back with a fella next to him that is more comfortable to the Alabama fans. You all understand, right? So, sisters and brothers, for Alabama to take a position against brutal police faster than liberal Oakland, faster than liberal Oakland, they say, as goes California, so goes the nation. We need to now do our part to rise this trial, if necessary, and surely it will probably be necessary, above Oakland. In Rodney King's case, they did not find in a jury of the officer's peers a finding of guilt. And even though we all witnessed Rodney King's beatdown over and over and over again, they came out of that trial and said, well, he must have done something. I know he resisted arrest. Their argument in Oscar's hand was moving. So what? What does that have to do with a gun? What does that have to do with a taser? A man laying on his face, does he need to be a statue? You mean if I twitch my fingers, that's a threat to a man with a gun? Who's got a knee on my neck and shoulder? He posed no threat. But again, if we find greater justice in Alabama than we find in California, then there's no such thing as justice. But we're here to get what we deserve. This trial may well have to go above the city of Oakland. When we make our caravan for justice on Tuesday morning, where we intend to deliver 40 busloads to the state's capital, we want the state attorney general to know that we're not satisfied by his silence in this case. He should know that every BART officer that testified has testified falsely. He should know that Bart has done nothing to discipline a single officer on that platform while they participated and watched the murder of Oscar Grant. He should know that we are not confident that we will secure justice in the local area, and that we may need to call for federal intervention because Oscar Grant's human rights were violated. Those of all of his friends, some of whom are here tonight. We certainly want to acknowledge and thank the young men that have already spoken in court. I've mentioned his tongue tying of the defense attorney, Brother Jamal Dewar. Why don't you come on up, Brother Jamal? Let us all see you. He can be gagged, I can talk. This is Brother Jamal. All right. Jamil. Who wrote Jamal? Y'all trying to get me in trouble. I don't want him angry with me. our young brother spoke bold truth.
That's right.
And he would not allow the color of law to distract his testimony. Others that may testify, speak the truth regardless of whom or what. We are not here to coach you in what to say or how to say it. Be yourself and speak the truth. And as Jesus said, ye shall know the truth. The truth is what's going to make us free, and it's the truth that's going to deliver justice in the murder of God. Surely be called back by the defense, because his is one of the videotape footages that came from the platform on that evening. Of course, we have with us Brother Jackie. Come on up. Now, these young men are generally at and around the court scenes every day. For not only were they present as witnesses, but they stand as keepers of justice and protection. I know when I see them that if there's a problem with those that want to bring conflict, they don't know how I see them. I see them as chiefs of our security. And I can see their eyes moving. What are the cops doing now? What are these people doing? They're very alert. And they want to engage and involve themselves with us in every step of the way, because this is really part of the healing for the family of Brother Oscar and for all of those that suffer to participate as actively as you can lawfully do. So we thank all of you for your continued presence at our town halls and your participation in the Caravan for Justice, and of course the roles that you all must play in the courtroom. May God bless you all.